League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant at the G, Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Altuve hits one high, hits one deep, hits one into the Crawford boxes, 2-0 Astros.
Hell yeah, bro. Let the good times roll. Stay chesty, because your beloved Houston Astros won 2 of 3 over the weekend against the mark-ass Chicago White Sox. They're now 11 games over 500. They lead the Seattle Mariners by 4 games in the American League West. And now you can actually look at the top of the AL standings and see a world where the Houston Astros climb their way to the top through a river of poo, a la Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption. Hello! It is Monday, August 19th, 2024. I am Paul. He is Joe. Joe, most importantly, I know the Astros took care of business against these bums, the White Sox, and it was really nice because I felt like I didn't need to watch the game on Saturday and Sunday, so I didn't. Because the team sucks. They won on Sunday, so the vibes are good. That was all we wanted, honestly. We wanted them to win 3, but winning on Sunday so we don't have to come in, even if they win 2 out of 3 with the vibes slightly down, that's the best part about what the Astros did this weekend.
Yes, they won on Sunday with essentially the Sugarland Space Cowboys
and Jose Altuve. That lineup, I mean, look, I get giving Yordan Alvarez a scheduled off day, and Alex Bregman, who we all thought at the end of our show on Friday
had died.
We thought he had the Super AIDS. We didn't know what was going on. He was scheduling a press conference with the way it was announced. We thought he was about to go Magic Johnson out there. He didn't, thankfully. It seems like he's going to be fine. He just slept wrong. Shout out to Sam, social media extraordinaire, for putting out the update. Alex Bregman slept wrong. But, I mean, that lineup yesterday, without Yordan and without Alex Bregman, it's not surprising at all that 4 of the 5 hits came from Jose Altuve and Yiner Diaz. You want to go through it for me, Joe? Just go through the list of who they were out on Sunday against this minor league ballpark on the south side of Chicago.
So Altuve, Peña, Diaz, good. That's good. Jake Myers?
He's batting cleanup. Jake Myers is batting cleanup. Just think about that.
Shea Whitcomb? Zach DiCenzo? Mauricio Dubon? We know that name. Chaz really sucks at baseball. McCormick? And then Pedro Leon.
Oh, my.
Hitting a hot one hundo the season.
I'm just glad that game lasted 2 hours and 3 minutes. I'm more glad that, patting myself on the back for this, that I didn't watch the game, didn't feel the need to. The White Sox are beneath me. White Sox are beneath you. You didn't need to watch that game on Sunday, and they sent you home early if you did.
Thankfully, Fromber was awesome again in this game. They yanked him after 82 pitches, which was, you know, I see why some people, you know, it caught their attention. People freaking out about injuries right now. There's only so many it feels like the Astros can have, but it seems like he's fine. They just pulled him early because they know the White Sox suck. And then they put Abreu and Hader out there, got the job done. But yeah, the Sugarland Space Cowboys with Jose Altuve, Jeremy Payne, and Yiner Diaz beat the Chicago White Sox yesterday. And yeah, we would have liked to sweep. You know, Junior Broncos blaming us saying because we demanded a sweep. Wrong. Paul's demanded sweeps before and it's worked out fine. This is not our fault. You can't blame us for this. But that was a good, they won on Sunday. You're right. Good vibes. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with you about the, I mean, I know we just posted a video on YouTube from John and Lance this morning talking about the like chasing for first place and if they can still finish there this season. They're five games back. Like it feels very obtainable at this point to finish first in the American League, at least get a bye in the first round and not,
I'm not
have
going
to play.
That far. I'm not going.
It,
that
it feels
far.
Obtainable. I'm sure they're not. I don't know if they're going to do it, but it does. Like it feels within reach, which is nice. I never thought we would be here.
I didn't think we'd be back here either, and you could definitely make the argument. Let's see, because Joe, things are about to get a little more difficult. You know, a wise philosopher he once said this.
You're going down for real.
Going down for real. It's going down for real. It's Florida.
Florida.
It's going down for real.
It's going down for real. You know? I know what you think you came here to see. If you're a freak, then you're coming home with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now bust it open. Let me see you get loose. I mean, the Astros, they're going to have to get loose. They're going to have to get out of their comfort zone.
Yes.
Like every white man on a dance floor, because here's what's coming up. Three against the Red Sox. We're not really that scared about them, these next three. But four at Baltimore, 73-52 on the year. Three at Philly, 73-51. And four against Kansas City, 69-55. Nice. 11 of their next 14 games are against teams that are at least four teams games above 500. And all of these games are against teams that are above 500.
Mm-hmm.
This is their toughest stretch the rest of the way. And if that five-game lead in the American League that whoever's at the top of the table, the Yankees, has is attainable, this is going to have to be a really impressive stretch for them. I'm not expecting much, and I'm not even asking for much. Just go 500 over this stretch. The Mariners are falling apart. The Rangers are 11 games back. But it's about to go down for real.
I if they're gonna get it, it starts with that Baltimore series. Four games versus the Orioles. If you're gonna chase them down, like yes, you need the Yankees to lose some games, but the Yankees are 5-5 in their last 10. So are the Orioles. Part of the reason why you've gained ground. I'm excited about this. I believe we declared that 7-game road stretch between the Orioles and the Phillies as the next World Series for the Astros. I kind of want, maybe we should get rid of that just because now all I can think about is the real World Series now that they're back into contention. But this is you're right.
No, those World Series happened and we're raising banners for them at the end of the year. The World Series that we declared for the Astros. Every time that we declared a World Series, they answer the call.
Okay.
Clear listeners of this program.
So we'll keep that World Series. So it's a World Series, Orioles and the Phillies. That's a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
We need them to go 4-3, win that World Series. But I'm with you. Just go 500. I'm not worried about the Mariners anymore. They're going to fall apart. That team is collapsing on itself.
The pitching's still good.
It is, but they just keep finding ways to lose.
I have a hard time believing that they will keep continuing to find ways to lose because their offense, not good. The pitching, good enough. And, I mean, their schedule is a little easier than the Astros the rest of the way. So I still am having a hard time believing that they're going to completely fall out of it, especially with this upcoming two-week stretch for the Astros.
Yeah, it's more about, like, that's why I think trying to go 500 over this next stretch for the Astros and will keep pace with the Mariners for the most part. And then you really have to like put your like foot on the gas the rest of the season. And that's when you widen that lead versus the Mariners, hopefully. Because if they do figure it out, look, the Mariners have the Dodgers and then the Giants, who are both two very good teams this year. You got to take advantage when you can. Losing that game on Friday was annoying, by the way. Like Crochet leaving after 42 pitches. Something like that, and then not being able to take advantage of when he left the game is a little annoying that they couldn't find a way to get that win and get the sweep. But all that matters is they got the series win, they got the Sunday win, so the vibes are better. And I feel good about the Astros right now, for the most part.
Some comments here. Chalupa Batman says of my mindset that going 7-7 over this stretch is enough. He says that's a P-word mentality.
Meow. I don't agree.
It's tough, and I say it from this perspective. Look who they had in the lineup yesterday.
Exactly.
I mean, good God. Who knows when Alex Bregman's going to be back? Do we trust the Astros?
His elbow hurt because he slept on it wrong. Okay, he still missed the whole weekend for what it's worth. And on top of that, Ryan Presley, he's on the injured list. Yordan Alvarez took a scheduled day off. I will believe it is a scheduled day off when he is back in the lineup tonight against the Red Sox. And we'll find that out, I'm guessing, at some point during the 3 o'clock hour. Killer Bees will break down every single small note of that Astros lineup throughout the show. Look forward to that. I look at this and I think to myself, let's see who is alive for that stretch against Baltimore and against Philly.
Exactly. Like right now, it's like getting this team healthy. Kyle Tucker, it's cool he's taking batting practice. That's nice to see. Like to see him in the lineup.
I don't even know what he's doing. Right.
Like, don't know how much closer he is to the lineup. But like, it's step by step. If Bregman's back today, it's just going to make me laugh even harder. We were all in the bullpen area when that happened. Because we were all like waiting for like this big news.
Yeah, we waited to leave on Friday because we wanted to see if Alex Bregman had HIV. I mean, seriously, the way that it was announced, it was like it was Magic Johnson 2.0. This is entirely the fault of the liberal media covering the Houston Astros, making me think that things were really bad with Alex Bregman. He's got the big C. I mean, come on. I've got COVID-20.
Monkeypox.
Monkeypox is back. You're right.
So, like, it could have been that.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, at this point, if it's the Astros with their injury history, nothing would surprise me. But, you know, he just slept on it wrong. Still trying to kind of figure it out. Like, I guess he sleeps, like, his elbow underneath the pillow. Maybe the pillow moved and he just slept directly on his elbow.
Oh, I do that from time to time.
Yeah. I just don't know how it makes your elbow swell up that much. But, you know what? Hey, maybe he's back today.
Yeah.
That'd be nice to see.
I mean, it would be nice to see because it's about to go down for real.
It's going down.
For real.
For reals.
You know, when I saw the artist named Flo Rida for the first time, I was struck by how, oh, it's because he's from Florida.
Okay. When was the first time you saw Flo Rida? Like, was it like in a concert?
I've never seen him.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know if he's white or black. Okay. Like, I couldn't tell you.
I would say, like, is Paul Gallant just, like, secretly, like, traveling the world going to Flo Rida concerts?
No.
Like, people go see the Grateful Dead?
I'm musically challenged. It was probably, like, last week that I saw that his artist name was Flo Rida. And I was like, oh, because he's from Florida.
Yeah.
Now I understand. Okay. All right, guys. He's Joe. I'm Paul. Astros again, 4 games above the Mariners in the AL West, 11 games above 500. The vibes are immaculate. But what the hell is going on that injury front? We know Alex Bregman. Well, we think Alex Bregman only hurt himself while sleeping. What the hell else is going on? Where's Kyle Tucker? What's up with Justin Verlander? Is Ryan Presley dying? We'll discuss next. It's Astros ER. Stick around.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Astros took 2 of 3 over the weekend from the White Sox to increase their lead in the American League West to a season-high 4 games. And now we're taking a look at the top of the table, as they say overseas, when it comes to whether or not the Astros can actually maybe get a first-round bye in these American League playoffs. They are not that far away.
They're very close. I'm ready for playoff baseball, though.
Well, yeah, so am I.
Like, now that the Astros are back in first place, and I think we all feel pretty confident they're going to win the AL West, now I'm just ready for like real baseball.
I still do not know how confident I am.
Okay.
But I am very happy with where things are going.
That's fair.
And I'm getting closer to that point, Joe, where I feel like, as someone who likes the Astros when they're good but doesn't like baseball when it's bad, I feel the same way in that there's a part of me that wants to just play the lottery, press Super Sim, and get to the playoffs. But there's always a danger to the Super Sim button if you've played one of those sports games and you're in season mode, and you think your team's good, but you never know. In Super Sim mode, one of your best players might get hurt. You might lose more games than you think.
It's true.
So I understand the urge the temptation. I don't think they're quite there, though, because as correctly pointed out on our YouTube channel, at ESPN Houston, Friendly Normie says the Astros are 25th in runs scored since the All-Star break.
Yes, but they also have one of the best ERAs in baseball this year, and at one point they had the worst ERA in baseball. The pitching's been phenomenal. I know the runs are not there. The season's kind of flipped on its head a little bit from where we started to where we are now. Where at the beginning of the season, they were getting guys on base. They just weren't getting guys home. But now the pitching has been so incredible. It does feel like this is 2022 vibes again a little bit, where the pitching can carry this team. And when you're healthier, because I don't know if you'll be fully healthy this season, the offense can do enough to where you can win meaningful playoff games. So I think it's a very valid point that they're still not scoring runs in bunches. That, you know, yesterday's game is so weird to use an example, but you only score two runs against the White Sox, and you have a minor league roster out there. But it's just kind of where you're at right now. And that's where it's your point, where it's like if they can go, I guess it's a 13-game stretch, so if they can go 7-6 over the next 13 games when they play the Red Sox, the Orioles, you know, the Phillies, the Phillies and the Royals, like you'll take it, but they're in a, it's challenging with where you're at health wise.
There's going to be a moment in time where I think we look at the starting pitching and it might come back to earth. Spencer Arrighetti, I think we saw a little bit of that on Friday,
mm-hmm.
where the bullpen, which I was stunned to see this. Since May 1st, only the Guardians and Brewers have lower bullpen ERAs than the Astros. Where they might come back to earth, especially if Presley's missing some time. I know Presley's last four outings, he gave up a run each one of those. And the offense ranks towards the top of baseball in a lot of statistical categories, but they go through these stretches where they do not score that much. And it is interesting to note that they are 25th in runs scored since the All-Star break, because they had that stretch where they were hitting the bejesus out of the ball, specifically against Boston at Fenway Park.
Yeah. They've really just, and so it shows you like what they've struggled to do in a lot of other games. I still think like it's not a major, just because of who's in the top of the lineup. Like I just feel like they can still figure it out on a consistent enough basis to where it's not a huge red flag. That when Yordan, Tucker, and Bregman are in that lineup, the way Yiner Diaz has been playing, the way Jeremy Pena has still been going this season, like they're, and you mentioned Jose Altuve, who put a ball literally through the scoreboard this weekend, was maybe my favorite part of this weekend, but. The offense is still good enough when healthy, 1-5, 1-6, that you can say this team can beat anyone on any given day with how good the pitching's being. I do agree with you. Like, while the pitching will come back to earth, don't you also feel that at some point the offense will pick it back up a little bit and it'll kind of balance out? Like, maybe as the pitching comes back down, the offense will go a little bit
better. Well, yeah, assuming Alex Bregman comes back from his injured while sleeping elbow,
yes.
And Kyle Tucker comes back from his shin bruise, which has kept him out for 2 months. And while we're on that, it's time for another episode of Astros ER.
If I expose exactly what's wrong with it, which will hurt him and hurt us.
You don't really know how he hurt it. Sometimes you wake up sore, hurting. You know, he's laughing a little bit more. And
he wasn't crying, but he had tears inside.
Bradley's doing fine.
He said he's feeling better.
It's not his throwing shoulder, so he should be fine.
I'd like to think I have healing power, but I don't.
This is a house of learned doctors.
Friday, at the end of the show, we thought that Alex Bregman had suffered some sort of serious injury with the way that it was announced. He was holding a press conference to talk about it. This is standard. This is a routine thing that happens where players speak in the clubhouse before games, but the way it was worded, and perhaps because we were a little punchy at 2:50 on a Friday, we were like, this
just ruined our vibes.
It definitely ruined the vibes, for sure. Alex Bregman had an MRI revealing no damage to his elbow. He thinks he slept on it wrong. He expects to miss just a few days. All right, it's been a few days, so let's see him back tonight.
I mean, they said it's possible he returns for the series versus the Red Sox here. It's one of those annoying things that the Astros do where if he doesn't play, I don't get why they didn't just put him on the injured list. They're just wasting an empty roster spot. And look, Shea Whitcomb like hit a couple hits this weekend. That was nice to see. But hopefully he's back today. Hopefully he really just slept on it wrong. I still don't quite get it.
Mm-hmm.
How sleeping on it wrong leads to the
elbow
point
discomfort.
Where you need to get an MRI.
Yeah. Normally when I sleep on my arm, I wake up and it feels like I have no circulation. And yeah, you got to shake it a little bit, and about 5 to 10 minutes later, your arm's back again.
Exactly. 5 to 10 minutes later, you're fine.
I also will say, you know, from time to time, when one sleeps with another person in the same bed, premarital, yes, occasionally everyone does that. Sometimes, let's just say me, sometimes we have a tough time figuring out where to properly put the hand so that the circulation doesn't get cut off or that I'm not uncomfortable. And maybe you, I don't know, make your partner mad because you seem like you don't want to cuddle with them because mainly you just don't want your arm to fall asleep underneath their weight.
So what you're saying is this is Alex Bregman's wife's fault.
Because I'm not, but it could be. It's got to be on the table.
Alex was cuddling his wife.
It could be.
And, you know, it's not. It's a little different for him. You know, happy wife, happy life. She wants to cuddle, he has to cuddle. No matter what it does to his elbow.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. You know what, Paul? Maybe you solved.
I'm hoping that the reason the Astros are hitting better at home is because they all have, I guess, better home lives. That was one of the fun suggestions on the Twitch. Like, oh, they hate their wives. It was why they were struggling so much at home. They just changed the batter's eye, by the way, over the weekend. And, I mean, I'll be honest, like, the results that I saw on Friday and Sunday don't make me feel that much better. You know, I don't feel like they needed to do it. I guess Yiner Diaz did almost have a 3-run homer, so it could have been a 5-0 win yesterday, but whatever. To bring it back to Astros ER, Ryan Presley is on the injured list. He has a lower back strain. He tried to pitch through it on the team's last road trip. His last four outings, he has allowed at least one earned run in all four of them. He's first eligible to return on August 29th, so that is when the Astros play the Kansas City Royals. He's going to miss all of the road trip after the Red Sox these next three. Baltimore and Philly, he won't play any of those seven games.
Okay, in a weird way, I'm like intrigued by this, by just what this means for Scott and like and how he fits into like a high leverage role, how he performs in the seventh inning instead of, you know, and now it goes Scott Abreu Hader for 7-8-9 instead of Presley being there. So I'm kind of curious to see how it goes because that's something we've talked about, but like how much faith you have in Presley versus him. So, like, could this be a Wally Pipp situation? I doubt it, but I'm excited to see what the outcome of it is. It does make your bullpen obviously much worse with Seth Martinez having to come back. But, I mean, look, old man Presley hurt his back. Probably sleeping. Sleeping, massages.
My back hurts.
You know what? Age comes to us all. I have not had any back issues this week, though, so I'm feeling good about that.
Oh, is that something that happens often to you, Paul?
No.
Oh, okay.
Taylor Scott, I thought, would pitch over the weekend, too. Interesting that we didn't see him on Saturday or Sunday, given how much Brian Abreu's been pitching this year. But, hey, whatever. Justin Verlander is expected to be back on Wednesday.
Awesome.
I saw that in Thursday's Corpus Christi game. I guess Justin Verlander made them wear the gray uniforms because he wanted them to. Power play.
I mean, look, you're Justin Verlander. You're in Double-A baseball. You do whatever you want, especially when you're probably providing lunch and dinner for all of your teammates, because that's typically what happens in minor league starts, is the vets buy the spread for the minor leaguers. So if you're buying the food, you wear the jersey that you want.
I think he just runs the show. Like, if he wants certain music played in between innings, he can make that happen. I would like to know the reasoning behind gray jerseys, please.
Here's what I saw in this Athletic write-up from Chandler Rome. The AA Corpus Christi Hooks have a uniform problem. Their grays don't match, meaning they'll defer to the blue jersey that catcher Ryan Rolebski wore while warming up at 6 p.m. Thursday. 15 minutes later, a team-wide text message sent him scrambling into the clubhouse. The Hooks starting pitcher, Justin Verlander, wanted to wear gray. And what Verlander wants, he gets. So they changed uniforms over a 15-minute stretch because Justin Verlander wanted them to switch uniforms. Okay. That is kind of psychotic.
Yeah.
That is like Framber Valdez when Framber needed to have his special little blue spring training jerseys.
And he provided food for the clubhouse. Great. Love it. Although that is down the line. Like, that is someone who probably makes like $10 an hour's job to make sure they have the right uniforms like readily available for these guys, even if it even is someone's job to make sure the uniforms are ready. It might even be like someone who has three other jobs at Corpus. So I hope that person got, I don't know.
Yeah, I hope they didn't get fired.
I hope they got a nice steak dinner or something.
Yeah, come on. That's who had to send that text message out? What an awkward thing. You got to text the players while they're all, I'm assuming, like about to take the field.
do they have their phone in their pockets? Some players do. That's you're not supposed to.
Yeah, be like, hey guys, Justin says change the jerseys. I mean, at least he didn't like go like full Chris Sale and just start like cutting up his jersey.
You hate that he did that. I love it. No, that's one of the funniest things a pitcher's ever done.
I think it's hilarious. The jerseys were trash. It was very funny.
The White Sox should have started wearing shorts like they used to with those.
I think that was when they did.
Yeah.
They had the short shorts on.
Like, short shorts are back, guys. They're back. I'm wearing short shorts right now. One last update for Astros ER. Yordan Alvarez had an off day yesterday, and everyone is saying it was routine. I'm just saying that he had the day off, and their lineup looked like the Sugarland Space Cowboys, as Joe George said earlier in the show.
Yep. Believe it when I see the lineup today that it was
yeah,
the day off.
That's where I'm at, too.
There's no faith that it's not more than that at this point.
He's Joe and Paul. That's Astros ER. We got Sean behind the glass coming up next. Yes, preseason football is a scam, but there were some really cool things that we saw in the Texans' murder of the New York Giants on Saturday. Also, is the Giants offense the worst thing in all of sports right now? Embrace debate. First, let me tell you about my friends at the Red Bull Showrun. Guys, you like F1? Formula One racing? Well, it's coming to downtown Houston September 7th. The Red Bull Showrun Houston is an admission-free, highly accessible event that's going to showcase the sport of Formula One racing in the heart of downtown Houston at Discovery Green. So you go down to Discovery Green and you're going to see all of the stuff that you see on Drive to Survive with your eyes. Championship winning F1 cars doing sprints, burnouts, and more all around the Discovery Green on a custom build racing track. Wow, that sounds pretty awesome. Make sure you get there early. It's a September 7th as well. There's going to be some street closures, but the event kicks off at 10 a.m. with the opening of the Red Bull Fan Zone. Get there early. You can do all the things that you want to if you're a huge F1 fan or if you just want to know more about racing. The racing action begins at noon. It's the Red Bull Showrun, September 7th at Discovery Green.
You're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Jones in some trouble in the end zone, and it's intercepted, and a touchdown! Jalen Petrie for six, and the Texans grab the lead.
Daniel Jones right there. He's got to get rid of the football. I know he saw Petrie on the spot, but throw it at Johnson's feet. There's no reason for that to have happened for the New York Giants. None whatsoever. That's an experienced quarterback. That is not a rookie. That's not a second-year guy. That's not Tommy DeVito.
I'm glad that John Harris did a drive-by on Daniel Jones and even Tommy DeVito as well, because Jesus H. Murphy, that was truly one of the worst plays I've ever seen a veteran quarterback make. If you didn't see it, God bless you for not watching a preseason game on a Saturday. Daniel Jones is under pressure. He gets outside the pocket. He gets hit by a Texan defender, and all he had to do was throw the ball out of bounds. He has the strength and the ability to do it. Instead, he tried to throw a pass to a guy who was very, very covered by Jalen Petrie. The pass wasn't even accurate. Petrie picks it off. The easiest pick six you will ever see in your life, Joe.
Yeah, that was he sucks. He's very, very bad. I don't know. Like John Harris is totally correct, which I love the local booth. But you can't make that throw. But Petrie, regardless, great Saturday.
Petrie played really
great
well.
Saturday.
And for those who don't know, Petrie has been playing in that nickel corner position for much of training camp, which has allowed third-round rookie Kalen Bullock to get some time with the first-team defense. And you actually saw that on Saturday, which is certainly interesting to me. That guy's got so much range. But it wasn't a Bullock day. This was a Jalen Petrie day. And it wasn't, Joe, just the pick six. In run support, considering how bad this guy was at tackling, his first year, his second year,
certainly all over the place in a good way his first year, but not so much last year. He made some really good open field tackles. Back-to-back plays, there were a couple. There was one where Azeez Al-Shaair got juked out of his shoes by Devin Singletary, who I low-key miss, doing what he did with that bad offensive line in front of him. Next play, there's a throw to the flat. Petrie makes a great open field tackle on the running back. There's a play where someone tried to run a sweep. He blows up the lead blocker on that play, causes Derek Barnett to be able to catch up and make a tackle for a loss. I thought he played really well, and considering the Texans are going to be playing generally with five defensive backs in that nickel formation, more often than not, Petrie doing what he was able to do on Saturday excites me because he looks, again, like he did in 2022, his rookie season, like a playmaker.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is what he played at Baylor. I guess the official term is the star position, which is just the extra, it's the nickel corner spot. He looked so comfortable everywhere. You're right. The tackling was great. The one where he pushed the running back or whoever it was out of bounds a little bit, like it wasn't the cleanest tackle. I thought it was an interesting point I saw on social media. I can't remember who said it. Like that's probably what we saw, the removal of the hip drop tackle, where he was kind of fumbling the guy out of bounds where he didn't bring him down to the ground right away. Like that in the past would have been the hip drop move that they've now removed from football. But he had a very good game. And if this is what he's going to be, it's exciting. It's still, you know, whatever the secondary, you know, the second safety position is going to stand out as kind of a question mark for this team. But Petrie in this role is really exciting. It's better than Desmond King would be in this position. Like seeing what he was doing, he was all over the field. It was definitely the thing to be the most excited about this weekend from watching that game from the first half.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You did like what you saw from the Texans passing game between the 20s. It looks like it's going to be really tough to stop C.J. Stroud throwing to either Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, or Tank Dell. I think that they definitely need to take a look at what they were trying to do when they got inside the 10-yard line. Ban the fade. Never throw a fade. I understand that you have a size advantage with Nico Collins at wide receiver, that Dalton Schultz as well at tight end is going to have a size advantage over a lot of the guys who are going to be matched up against him. But the fade is the worst play. And C.J. Stroud's fade attempts to Nico Collins, out of bounds. The throw to Dalton Schultz, very out of bounds. And then they tried to run a slant play where I don't think Tank Dell would have gotten into the end zone. I think Dell would have ended up getting just absolutely smashed in the same way that he did that one time where he, at the goal line, remember, broke his leg.
Yeah, there's too much talent on this offense to, once Joe Mixon's out there, between Mixon, Schultz, and then the three wide receivers, and just having C.J. Stroud as your quarterback, I'm with you. The fade sucks.
Like, fade is a terrible play.
It's just, it looks really cool when it works.
Like, yes.
You get like the posterized photo of Nico Collins reaching over the top, the Randy Moss, you know, style catch. It's just the efficiency rate. I don't know why in a like analytics world, these teams look at the fade and still say that's a great decision for us. Like the success rate cannot be high enough to where they try it all the time. I don't get it.
The fade success rate is a lot like the success rate that you'll see of insert basketball player who thinks he is the best offensive option for his team with 13 seconds or so left on the game clock deciding, I'm just going to do this on my own. When it works out, it looks great. How often does it work out? Even the best players in basketball, generally when they are trying to work themselves, set themselves up for that last shot, they're going to miss the majority of the time. And yet they still do it over and over again. It's a lot like the fake.
Yeah, I'm over it. I'm hoping, you know what, maybe we'll give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt here. It's the preseason. They're not unleashing their full playbook right now. But the least amount of fades, unless you really get a matchup you like with Nico Collins, as little as possible. The one thing from last year that I did not love was the red zone conversion, the third and short, fourth and short stuff in Bobby Slowick's offense that I thought we've talked about this, that could hold them back again a little bit in 2024. I think eliminating the fade and finding better ways to score, it starts there. But to me, the best play, honestly, from CJ was like the opposite of the Daniel Jones play, where Daniel Jones is in the end zone, he throws the pick, he looks totally lost. On the flip side, when the Texans have the ball on the one-yard line and have 99 yards to go, when CJ's back there, he's cool, calm, collected. He gets great pass blocking, and he finds Dalton Schultz wide open in the middle of the field. And that was like one of my favorite plays from this weekend as well.
His pocket presence is Clint Eastwood-esque in insert movie where he has a gun.
Yes.
It's just calm, cool, and collected. And, you know, I feel a little sacrilegious saying it reminds me of Brady, but the pocket presence that he has does remind me of Tom Brady's. We'll just leave it at that.
I like that. I like that too.
The running game sucked. It sucked. Damian Pierce, partly to blame. The offensive line's got to figure this out, and I'm a little concerned about this going into the regular season. I think Cam Akers has earned looks, perhaps ahead of Damian Pierce, on the depth chart, and I'm assuming that in Thursday's joint practice against the Rams, that he will get those opportunities against his old team. But the offensive line and the receivers blocking downfield too, they got to help out. This blocking for the running game, it just has not been good enough. And I know a lot of people are dumping on Pierce, rightfully so. He is hesitating a little bit, but
yeah, I want to kind of backtrack a little bit from last week. There is Pierce where I just feel like he can't get anything. My biggest frustration with the run game is why in the preseason did we see, and to your point, maybe we'll see it this week in training camp. I guess we won't. I won't be there. But why did Cam Akers in the game not get any reps behind that offensive line? Like I would have liked to see if it looked any different with him behind that group than with Pierce behind it.
I
want to blame Pierce, but I'm just not sure I can.
Because Agun Bawale came in before Cam Akers did. I think the Texans are on the same page as I was when they brought in Cam Akers. I think they thought at first, oh, yeah, he's just a guy, and that they have been impressed slowly by what he's doing. We'll see if that means more of a role going forward, but Damian Pierce right now is definitely not in a good spot, even though I don't think this is all his fault. There are moments where he's clearly hesitating, and he's just isn't a fit for this scheme, even though I think he has talent. The last thing I wanted to say about this preseason game, other than that preseason football is a scam, and if you had to pay full price to go to that game where the roof's not even there and you're sitting in the upper levels probably cooking for a good portion of the game, like, Godspeed to you. We are blessed to have this job, but as someone who used to work at the flagship station, I'm never going to another preseason game the rest of my life. Even if held at gunpoint, I will take the bullet. I'm not doing it again. Just not doing it, okay? Not doing it. I get it. First world problems. This is making me seem like I'm jaded. I am, but I do want everyone to know I appreciate my job and I appreciate my career. Preseason football is just an absolute waste of everybody's time in the grand scheme of things because it's just a tease to get you an expensive tease, like going to the strip club where you're not actually getting anything out of it.
Ooh, preseason football is a strip club.
Pretty much.
I think that is maybe the best analysis you've ever given, Paul. I mean, I think it's a great analogy.
It's a tease. You don't get anything. You don't get anything out of it. It's an expensive tease.
But sometimes you do leave excited, and that's how John Metchie made me feel. Like, that was fun. John Metchie.
I refuse to do wide receiver four talk.
It's not wide receiver four talk.
It is wide receiver. He's wide receiver four.
It's John Metchie.
If we're doing the stupid, like, wide receiver one, two, three, four. He's the fourth string receiver.
For the first time in his career.
Probably fifth at best.
Looked competent. That was fun to see. For a, like, pro, this is a good story. The excitement from Stroud and Tank and all the guys on the sideline after Metchie scored. I enjoyed just seeing John Metchie have success. I don't know what it means for this roster. I'm with you. I don't totally care if he's on it or not at this point. But in a career where he struggled, it was nice to see some positive things from Metchie.
Yeah, Metchie did some good things out there. So good for him. The last thing, in addition to preseason football being a scam, I didn't quite get to the point. Got lost and just talked about how much I hate preseason football. The Giants are the worst thing I've ever seen. That offense, everyone should go to jail. Brian Daboll, jail. Daniel Jones, jail. Whoever put together that offensive line, jail. Those wide receivers, poor Malik Nabers.
That one catch, though.
I mean, he had a nice catch. He should have caught one on the first drive of the game. But the beginning, the very first play of the game, Daniel Jones throws it right to Derek Stingley.
Yep.
Right to him. It's not like it was something tricky that Derek Stingley did. It was a comeback. Derek Stingley didn't move, and Daniel Jones threw it right to him. Then you had the interception that Daniel Jones threw while he was in the end zone. Then
on a drive where the Giants did actually a couple of nice things. Specifically, Devin Singletary did a couple of nice things. But Neighbors had a nice catch downfield, too. He throws it down the right sideline to I don't even know who. I think Darius Slayton.
I think so, too.
Stingley was with him step for step the whole way. We're talking about one of the best in terms of like guys to go and get the ball, corners in the league. What are you doing? How are you highly paid? And how do I become highly paid while sucking at my job, dude, like that?
Great question.
That's what I want to know. But there's rumors that people were talking to me on my live stream after the game that this guy, bearded Daniel Jones, may or may not be dating a prominent, beautiful NFL talking head. And I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking to myself, this guy's making almost $100 million. And why? Because somebody who used to coach Peyton Manning used to be at Duke? Like, I don't get it. How? How the hell is Daniel Jones in the NFL? How is he a top 10 pick? How is he an $100 million quarterback? That guy is effing terrible. One of the worst things I've ever seen. The Giants offense is an abomination to the Lord.
If they don't
put in Tommy DeVito. He sucks too. Put him in. My God.
Where's Drew Lock? I thought he was on that team.
I forgot about him. Yeah. He didn't even get to come in.
If they don't have a top five pick this year, I would be stunned. That is one of the five worst teams in the NFL this year.
That is the worst offense for sure.
Like, yes.
I will put money on that. That will be the lowest scoring, lowest yards offense. Brian Daboll can't fix that. He can't. I kind of wish Wink Martindale was still there, so maybe there's a chance that Wink Martindale would sucker punch somebody like his buddy Ryan sucker punching Kevin Gilbride.
I like that.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, Daniel Jones is very bad.
He sucks.
Confirmed bad.
He sucks.
Worst contract in the NFL.
It would be one thing if he was a rookie doing all that stuff. That guy's a five-year, $100 million guy. Who was the dumbass that thought that was a good idea?
Whoever the GM is?
No, I mean, John Mara had to sign off on that.
He's Daniel Jones. It's that one play where he ran downfield and it looks like he got shot by a sniper and just falls down. Where I just I think about that and this pick, it's embarrassing.
He is so bad. And hey, you know what? I'm happy for all the players out there who suck and get paid. Rafael Montero, this one's for you. Jose Abreu, this one's also for you. Good for you pulling one over on a corporation. We all love it. We all want to do it. Come on, let's admit it. We all want to pull one over on our bosses.
Yes.
F the bosses. We all want to pull one over. But at this point, I mean, someone should be arrested. Someone should be arrested.
That's the meanest thing you've ever said to Jose Abreu.
What?
You just put him in the same conversation with Daniel Jones.
Well, I mean,
Jose Abreu won an MVP.
What, you think the Giants don't want to old yeller his ass now?
That's true.
I mean, the Giants are looking at themselves in the mirror. They got rid of their best running back, their only good offensive player as well. The owner clearly wasn't happy about that. And now they have Daniel Jones next season. Poor Malik Nabers. He's going to be asking for a trade midway through the year.
Yeah.
Can't wait for his first passive-aggressive tweet about his dog bleep quarterback.
I just can't wait till Tommy DeVito comes back because I feel like you're going to have takes.
Yeah, I will, because everyone put him up on a pedestal because he's Italian, but they won't do the same thing for Aiden O'Connell, who was just benched for Gardner Minshew in Vegas. That's anti-Irish discrimination. But, oh, Tommy DeVito's Italian, and he's basically making a mockery of all the stereotypes about his culture, and he's cooler because he does that. The DeVito stuff last year was so insufferable.
It was like my favorite stuff to listen to.
Ed McConnell, so. He's an Irish American, and you know what he does? He just shows up to work and he gets drunk after. That's what a normal Irish person does.
Sits on the bench.
Now he's sitting on the bench. He is Joe. I am Paul. Sorry for the preseason takes. Okay, Daniel Jones. Oh boy. At least the Texans actually get a real test on Thursday defensively, because if the Giants' offense honestly might have made them. It might have made them a little bit better. We're just going to go all the way through to 55 here. You know, the preseason, we all can agree. We're just trying to get to the end.
We're close.
It's a tease. We're so damn close. Caleb Williams did some fun things. He had some cute little throws against backups. They were cool. Patrick Mahomes threw a pass around his back. That was cool. But guys, we got to talk about the big thing in sports because it's back. Now that the Olympics are done, it's back. Joe, why are you smiling?
It's back.
You're smiling. And I know he sees what's in the rundown right now. Sean's kind of smiling, too. Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought you guys were better than this. I really did. But a little sexism showing because we are going to talk about the WNBA, the strong and powerful women of the WNBA.
Do you even support women's sports?
Women failed the WNBA.
We do.
Easton leads the scoring with 4.
And that's why she commands $7,000 a year.
It's time to talk WNBA.
Yeah, man. Did you see what happened to Caitlin Clark?
She got bullied.
She got bullied by Skylar Diggins-Smith. It actually does seem like she was bullied. So for those who didn't see this, there is a clip, and now all of a sudden it has been inserted right back into the midst of the culture war, where Skylar Diggins-Smith, who plays for a team, I don't know who, she,
Seattle?
During a timeout, goes out of her way to walk and speeds up while walking so that she can walk into Caitlin Clark. But when she walks into Caitlin Clark, I guess, has been, you know, doing a little lifting while everyone's been off at the Olympics, and Skylar Diggins-Smith bounces off Caitlin Clark while trying to walk into her purposefully. The mean girl stuff that goes on in this league is fun. I love it.
I just can't believe how soft the refs are, though. Caitlin Clark got a tech for punching the hoop because she was mad at herself. She like she's punched the padding. And
we can't have our women. We can't have our women injuring their hands.
But like, she's just mad at her. She's mad at herself, and she took it out on an inanimate object. She got tech for it. Soft league.
But
there's so much mean girl stuff. You're right.
There's a lot of mean girl stuff, and the race war also back in the WNBA. Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese in NBA 2K, which apparently has women's basketball players.
Huh.
They are tied for the best mark among rookies in the WNBA at a 90 overall rating.
A 90 as a rookie?
Both have a 90 as a rookie. Well, I don't think they're putting as much effort, no offense, ladies out there, into the WNBA ratings. I don't. But for what it's worth, if you take a look at the statistics for Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, the only thing that Angel Reese is doing better than Caitlin Clark this year is her rebounds a game. She has 12 of them a game.
That's because she misses all of her shots.
I didn't want to say it. You're a sexist. It's fine. You can
I'm
say
not
it.
Sexist. I am a factualist.
Well, I mean, it is factual. She is getting a lot of rebounds because she's missing a lot of layups. I'm guessing her layup rating is low.
Not if you're a 90.
Well, it's the layup rating. It's not that important. Come on. But look, I know some people, I see the text line right now. People are getting mad about it because you're all a bunch of sexists. And I'm sorry, I'm a white knight who supports women. But the front page of ESPN this morning, because I go to do a little show prep, I go to ESPN.com, see what everyone's talking about. What are the big stories? The top three stories on ESPN.com on a Monday were Caitlin Clark adds to record year with rookie assist mark. And didn't happen. Becky Hammond denies mistreating Hamby. It says Hammond denies mistreating Hamby. Who the hell would know who those people are without clicking on the actual link? And the story, for those who don't know, Becky Hammond, who used to be with the Spurs, like Popovich's assistant, apparently per Diarica Hamby, she was traded because she was pregnant. Becky Hammond traded her because she was pregnant. Like, that's the claim that she made.
This headline sucks.
What a great league.
Like, I don't know any of these people, so like, give me a juicier headline to click on the article. What a wild story.
I love that.
Does this happen often?
I don't know.
That's my biggest question. Like, does this happen like once a year where players get traded because they're pregnant?
I mean, that's what every corporation wants to do instead of giving maternity leave. They want to trade the person who's going on maternity leave. They won't say it to your face, but you know that's what they're thinking. Oh, she got knocked up again? She's gonna be out?
I don't want to get
might never come back?
I don't want to get canceled for this, but like, is it that different than like trading someone who's injured? Like, if she's going to miss the playoffs because she's out, like, is it that different than trading someone who has a torn ACL?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Like, what's the, like, is it really that different?
It's a good question.
Because like, you know, they're not available this year, but they'll be back next year, so you get future asset in return. It's like the Rockets trading for Steven Adams. What's the difference?
It's a great question.
But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
He's Joe. I'm Paul. It's Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're welcome for the hot WNBA takes. Up next, how wide open is the American League with the Astros just 5 games back of the best record? We'll discuss. Stick around.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.